Behavioral Health Today, a podcast by Tried Behavioral Health, covering trending topics in behavioral and mental health. This podcast is designed to share unique and relevant topics occurring within the world and our communities and bring them a mental health perspective.
I'm your host, Dr. Graham Taylor. I would like to start today's show by thanking our listeners for all their positive support and reviews that you've given our show. In the past few months, since we've launched this podcast, we've received a number of suggestions for future topics from you, our listeners. Over the coming weeks and months, we'll be hosting a series of episodes based on those suggestions, starting today with spirituality and psychotherapy. If you have an idea for a topic you would like to hear, we invite you to visit us at triadbehavioralhealth.com. From that page, and again, that's triadbehavioralhealth.com, you can find the link to our podcast homepage under What We Do. And from there, you can suggest a topic by clicking on the link to Send Us Your Idea. We want to thank you again for making this podcast a two-way conversation between us and our listeners. And again, we appreciate your support and your ratings. Welcome to Behavior Health Today. I'm your host, Dr. Graham Taylor, and I'm joined today by Dr. Rick Johnson. Rick is a psychologist in private practice, a professor at Portland State University, and the founder of the Rick Johnson Consulting Group. He's also written three books, Reclaiming Your Real Self, which is a self-help book, a textbook, Spirituality and Counseling and Psychotherapy, and Conation, a young adult novel. Rick, welcome to Behavioral Health Today.
Thank you.
It's really nice to have you here with us. You know, today we're talking about spirituality and psychotherapy. And what I know is that most are looking to live their lives in kind of a growth-oriented, creative, life-affirming way. But there's often a struggle to do so, resulting in many kind of falling short, you know, of their expectations and their dreams, even recognizing for some that that ladder they've been climbing and reaching the top of maybe has been actually been leaning against the wrong wall all along, you know, leaving people feeling sad, discouraged, lost, hopeless. And I know that in your work and in your writings, you're encouraging the incorporation of spirituality into one's life, teaching and helping folks learn how to have a deeper connection within themselves such that they can tap into their inner guide for their own healing, for their own growth, and the potential really to transcend into a life of abundance and a life of meaning. So as we start our topic today, would you just start by defining for us how you understand spirituality and how that differs from religion, and how in your work you help develop one's spirituality get woven into and through that therapeutic process?
Yeah, the way I think about it, spirituality is an umbrella concept for way people connect with the divine or something larger than themselves. It can be very faith specific or much more global, sometimes very philosophical. So I see spirituality as an umbrella idea of connecting to something outside ourselves. And religion tends to be one avenue that many people use to attain connection to the divine. Mm-hmm. And of course, that really differs based on faith and practices. In my work, and the way I got interested in it is I just started asking lots of people what their definition of spirituality is and how do they know they're connected to it. And so I got to hear about, you know, walks in nature and thinking about the cosmos and moments of artistic connection or moments when the self disintegrates and something else, an essence or a presence is there. I tend to approach it more from that broad, inclusive view and a very personally defined idea. And that's what I encourage therapists to do primarily, is to approach clients that we're all spiritual beings with more or less interest in it at different times, but assume that everyone has at least some philosophical basis for how they're thinking about themselves in the world, how they're making sense of the world, with some level of drive for meaning. Mm-hmm. And we as therapists need to be curious about it. We need to, you know, not be in a position of knowing, but a position of curiosity and openness. Mm-hmm. With our clients so that they can tell us their personal experience with what is spirituality. How do they connect with it? How do they, what happens when they do? And then we can support that as a resource.
That's really good. I like the idea of, you know, you're saying connecting with the divine, and it's very individual. Everybody's going to have their own experience, their own story. And you're talking about how one connects with something outside of themselves for their own drive, for their own meaning, for purpose in their lives. You're talking about bringing that into the therapeutic process, and you're talking about taking the connection with that divine and trying to take it within oneself for a greater understanding, to tapping into a greater awareness, and for that therapeutic process between the patient and the therapist to have that back and forth in an exploratory way. Say more about that part, connecting now within the self for understanding and direction.
Well, I try to stay open to however clients might experience it. Some experience it as an external force or an external,
okay,
force, whether it's God or nature,
okay,
cosmos, and they feel more like passive recipients. Others are co-creating with, yeah, something outside themselves, and they feel more active or co-involved with, okay, this, whatever this presence may be. For others, they really don't think of it as external. They do think of it as an internal experience of maybe stillness, or when the normal ideas of self and the part in the dual world, the part, mm-hmm, that's, you know, operating with the outside world, sometimes we call sort of the small self or the internal managers that are operating in the world. When we can step back from it or unblend from that experience, sometimes, yeah, we can have a deconstruction of the self as we know it that allows us to connect to something else internally or externally. I approach it as a not knowing and just a curiosity, because I love when I learn. I love to ask them about their prayer life. If they say they pray, I ask them if they'd be willing to tell me, well, what does God tell you? You know, what do you ask? Because I'm interested, and yeah, I don't have all the answers, but I'm interested in learning and seeing what it means in their life.
That is such a cool exchange between the therapist and the patient, just to explore those things safely and invitingly. What type of a place do you encourage, or are you maybe even kind of holding up that therapists kind of need to be in themselves with regards, mm-hmm, to their own spiritual awareness, their own spiritual differentiation,
yeah,
to be able to have that understanding so that they can join their patients they're working with in that exploratory process freely and unbiased?
Yes, that's, and what you're pointing at, Graham, is the most important aspect. In my research, both clinically and in teaching and in supervising, is the level of what I call spiritual differentiation.
Okay.
Variety of factors that go into whether we're effective or not at being able to integrate spirituality into the process. But that's the most important one, which is how aware and resolved therapists are of their own issues related to spirituality or religion in their own past. The more trauma that they've experienced associated with religion, you know, abuse of different kinds, restrictions of potentials, projections, that these are violence onto our souls that then create reactivity. People, yeah, then get, you know, a therapist too, get very reactive around religion. You're one of those. I don't like those. You're scary. And we, of course, we see that in our social political discourse, lots of othering. And that the linchpin is around that level of reactivity. And so one of the things I do when I do trainings for therapists or teach classes on spirituality is I read a long list of spiritual words, spiritual and religious words that are kind of loaded and provocative. Yeah. And I ask people to close their eyes and turn in and just use mindfulness to be aware of what's being evoked.
Yes.
You know, images, memories of, yeah, past experiences associated with certain words.
Right.
If their clients use those words, I want to get sensitized to it so that, yeah, we get comfortable with a variety of different perspectives. And that if a client says, Jesus Christ is my Lord and Savior, and if you came from a fundamentalist background where that was, there was abuse or it felt really limiting to your potential, yeah, you may be thinking, oh, I have to save this person from this abusive experience. And that's now an assumption that can really interfere with your ability to really be curious and get connected with this client. So the most important thing you're pointing at is we're in what I would call core self energy or real self energy, where we're in a grounded space that's non-reactive.
I really like that encouragement you know, those counter-transferential reactions that get kicked up, you know, for us as we're working for folks. We hear something and we get triggered, you know, whether it's our own stuff or whether it's something, you know, the person's saying. There's, you know, different kinds of counter-transferences, but that the part where it's our stuff, and to be able to understand mm-hmm. that, to be able to work through mm-hmm. that, or at least hold that mm-hmm. in an unobtrusive way. What you're also saying, maybe on the flip side of that, would be the place that you find being helpful and maybe essential. You know, you're talking about developing this type of spirituality, this kind of connectedness that one, you know, kind of can use to mindfully connect with themselves, to truly know maybe what their core needs are, to determine what might be right for them in living their most authentic lives. But in order to develop that awareness within oneself, on, from the patient side here, and develop that valid trust in their inner real self, which can be, you know, accessed down the road in their own life from here on out from therapy, they can access greater clarity, greater direction for themselves. They can access some strength to take the challenging next steps that for life-enhancing mm-hmm. decisions they're going to be making. Mm-hmm. But it would be important, really almost essential, much like the therapist, but for the patients to be assisted mm-hmm. in working through those aspects of their lives that could interfere with that valid self-trust being developed, mm-hmm. past traumas, yeah. like you're suggesting, or dysfunctional relationship dynamics, their psychic schemata, or the model mm-hmm. from which they're working, the distortions maybe in their self, other perceptions, or mm-hmm. maladaptive, you know, ego defenses. All of these things, if left unconscious, unhealed, are going to distort someone's ability to validly really trust and go inside. So how are you addressing, I get the part where you just said, which I love, helping therapists get to that place. How are you encouraging therapists to help the patients get to that place where those things yeah. can be understood, identified, worked through, and then freed up, so there's this better ground for exploration of the real self? Connect that for me.
Well, you're doing a lot of great connections yourself. The first thing is this is why I love being a psychologist, because yeah. we get to do both.
Yes.
I think, you know, I've worked with a lot of, as clients, I've worked with a lot of spiritual leaders and teachers. And they can have some big blind spots because they've yes. done psychological work. And of course, psychologists or other mental health professionals can have some blind spots and biases with spiritual and religious issues like we're talking about. Yes. But if we can stay open to both, again, that's why I love doing what I get to do, because I get to work with both. I can work with the trauma and yes. the relational issues, which are usually at the root of what's gone on for people that are creating depression, anxiety, or other symptoms and challenging their sense of real meaning or satisfaction in life. And we can also talk about what kind of philosophical and or spiritual framework that they're using to make sense of themselves in the world, or how they're making sense of what's happened to them in the world, mm-hmm. and why. You know, I was just working with a client earlier this morning who's a high-ranking executive at a company. Drive, 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 you know, right. and then having all kinds of physical symptoms.
Yes.
Some panic attacks and some
right.
Other types of, you know, sleep disturbance and moodiness and, you know, right. people who are working too hard. And, you know, and so on a behavioral level, you know, you got to make sure you're getting enough sleep and yes. eating, exercising, and allowing the, you know, the internal equipment, the filters to help kind of process the impacts of life. But at the same time, then there's still the question of, well, why am I doing this? Why am mm-hmm. I so hard? What does this really mean or matter? Is it just to make money? Is that why I'm here? You know, we can accumulate, but yeah. then we can tie that piece in. The mindfulness allows us to bring the power of the present moment into whatever one of our encounters. I mean, that's my primary tool that I use to notice when I'm anxious or the different parts of me. I use internal family systems therapy quite a bit, IFS, where I'm checking in with the different parts and then coming back to the present moment in gratitude. And there's my breath, and I'll do the best I can today. I'll do the next right thing.
Yes.
And yeah. I'm here in this moment, and then I'm here in this moment. And then that's connected to us a larger sense of values and meaning. Like, what do I care about? And that informs my sense of personal integrity. And then if I can be in that space, then I have a much better access to making decisions around career or relationships. Or the question that I often pose with clients is what you're talking about, this activity or relationship, is it life affirming?
Yeah.
You know, is this something that's aligning with your soul? Is it making you feel you're grooving with it? And how do you know? And what's the difference between that and your internal managers, or as Carl Jung would say, you know, more of your persona, or things that you think you have to do to appear a certain way? Let's separate that. Let's separate that from when you're feeling like, no, this is really the real me, or when I'm feeling more settled. And when we can touch that, and I believe everybody has it.
Absolutely.
It's just remembering and practicing how to do it, whether it's taking hikes or breathing, or, and that's where I'm open to whatever the client does that can help them access life-affirming energy.
You know, I oftentimes organize the way that we're kind of constructed or created. We have, you know, three parts to ourselves. We've got the relational, emotional, kind of psychological part. We have the physical part of ourselves, and we have a spiritual part of ourselves. But in therapy, a lot of times, we're focusing on more the relational, the emotional, the psychological part, maybe some of the physical things like sleep and behavior patterns, exercise, health. But when we bring in the spiritual side, and when I think about those three areas, when you think about it, at least in my mind, there are laws that govern the healthy functioning of all three of those areas. And when we bring in the third, the spiritual part, whether it's something outside of ourselves or something that's cultivated from the within, we really round out and provide through therapy an opportunity for some great exploration and the embracing of all three. And what a great encouragement to welcome that in. You know, we just don't keep that in the temples and the synagogues, or ones, you know, walking on a trail to connect to themselves, whatever it may be, their own exercise. We bring that into therapy to incorporate it into a more congruent and authentic sense of self. And I love that piece. The other part that's striking for me is you're talking about something that Simon Sinek oftentimes talks about. He talks about the golden circle, and he talks about we so easily get caught up in the what and the how, but we don't oftentimes take a look at the why. Why am I doing this? What is what you just said a few minutes ago? What is my meaning? What is my purpose in this? What would give me the greatest life-affirming stance into this piece? So the why, the what and the how is easy. You know, we can do that. We do that all day long, but we get burned out if we're not doing it for the right reasons, then there's no real return on that investment. But if the why is clear, which is what your encouragement is, and I really love, that gets us kind of really goal-directed, and the life enhancement opportunity is really accentuated in terms of a possibility. Yeah. Love that. Yeah.
No, well said.
Really like that. Hey, since we're talking about this, I'd love to hear a story about someone you've worked with where you've incorporated this part of your work with them and encourage them to come in with this awareness. Anybody come to mind? We'd love to hear it.
Gosh, many people come to mind.
I'd imagine.
I'll bring up one person where this was someone who has an extensive trauma history and sexual abuse by a father. And just really, of course, the fragmentation that that creates. And she would dissociate. This is maybe a more extreme example, but you know, for therapists, trauma is something where we work with, right?
Yes.
She could have easily been diagnosed as someone on a personality disorder, really struggling with dysregulation. I worked certainly on a level of self-care and using self-regulation skills, but things really got moved forward in the therapy when I started being open to and asking about her spirituality. You know, some of it was how did she reconcile the abuse? How did God let abuse happen her on this level?
Yeah.
And why did that happen? And that was a hard process, right, for her, but we stay with it. And so a lot of the healing was, you know, one of the things I tell therapists all the time is don't try to do spiritual therapy. Do effective therapy and then be open to spirituality. We know a lot of the elements of effective therapy. So start there. And that's what we did with this client. And things started to really take off where she started to connect through art. So for her, it happened through painting. And she started to have moments of feeling connected to something larger. Then she started to pray. And she would come in tentatively and talk to me about that as I encouraged it and supported it. It just grew and became, you know, you can think of it in some ways similar to like an object relations or interpersonal play. People have to kind of rework in a way, what's their relationship with something larger than themselves? I mean, they do therapy with us, if as the therapist thinks, you know, psychoanalytically or from more of an attachment or interpersonal perspective, well, of course, we're in that energy field with the clients, but now we're now inviting spirituality as part of that energy field, thinking about their relationship with God or however they define spirituality. She used the word God, so I use the word God. And that's what I tell them, is use the words your clients use. Don't force what you think it should be, you know, stay with them. And long story short, I mean, I worked with her for over 10 years. It was obviously long-term therapy, but she ended up divorcing an abusive husband, being able to really kind of recover herself, and then eventually got into a healthy relationship. It was beautiful.
That's awesome.
Thing, and her spiritual practice, still really through prayer and through her art, were essential for her recovery.
Yeah, fantastic. What a great story. Therapy can be so effective, and the inclusion of that spiritual side can be a really helpful dimension to incorporate. Yeah, great story. That's a good one.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, we are kind of beginning to wind down on our time today, but I would love for you to make some recommendations for our listeners. I know you've written some texts like we talked about, but in terms of those that are interested in their own personal growth, including spirituality, give us some suggestions, would you?
Sure. Well, let me just plug a couple of my books again.
I'd love to hear that, please.
The first one that you mentioned, Reclaiming Your Real Self, that's a self-help book. So I use that for clients, and many, many clients have found that very helpful. It integrates ideas of family and relationship issues, psychological issues, and how that integrates with spirituality from a kind of broad and inclusive perspective. And then you mentioned my textbook, which gets used by therapists. And then my young adult novel, what I did there was I tried to take some of the ideas primarily from Reclaiming Your Real Self and in a format, a story format that young adults could relate to without feeling like they were being preached at. So it's embedded into an adventure. It's sort of what I call an existential adventure novel.
Cool.
You know, so that's a fun one. Conation. All those are available at my website through Amazon. RickJohnsonPhD.com. I've been in psychological and spiritual study groups for many years. And I really recommend that for therapists to get together with other therapists for reading on the topic and talking about it. So I've read many, many, many books that have been quite influential. I mean, I love in the Buddhist psychology area, Radical Acceptance with Tara Brach. I love the stuff with Mark Epstein. Psychotherapy Without the Self is one of my favorites. Found that really useful. Pema Chodron's new book is another Buddhist-oriented one. As I mentioned, I love IFS, Internal Family System. So the stuff written by Richard Schwartz and other IFS folks, I think it's a great integration of sort of Jungian ideas with very much related to like a core self or a real self with the parts work. It's wonderful stuff. Lots of mindfulness stuff. ACT is also great with mindfulness. But the thing I'm probably the person I'm the most into right now is a guy named Michael Eigen. He's a psychoanalyst in New York City. He's written almost 30 books. He does a weekly internet seminar you can join. And I've been in study groups with his writings for a long time. It's very poetic and evocative. He integrates all kinds of stuff, lots of Taoism. It's Wilfred Bion and Winnicott, primarily from the psychoanalytic traditions. But his book, Contact with the Depths, taught with that book in spirituality classes. And Faith in Transformation is another one of his books. The Sensitive Self is an amazing book. I could go on and on about Michael Eigen. He's just amazing stuff.
Very good. Well, that's wonderful. That's quite a list for our listeners to benefit from. Thanks for sharing that list where you are. Yeah. Well, Rick, it's been great to have you with us today. It's a real pleasure just to learn from you and to understand how we get to bring spirituality, a whole nother dimension, into the therapy process in intentional ways and inviting ways, and how that can be part of not just a therapeutic process, but a real healing that can take place in another dimension for our work. So thank you so much. Great to have you here today.
Thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity, and you're obviously doing great work as well.
Appreciate that. And always to those that are listening, We want to thank you for being with us, and we look forward to having you join us next time on Behavioral Health Today.
Hey, Behavioral Health fans, we want to hear from you. If you have an idea for a show topic that you would like covered in a future episode, go to triedbehavioralhealth.com/behavioral-health-today and click on the Send Us Your Idea button to submit a topic. We appreciate all the support from our community, and if you like our show, one of the best ways you can support it is by giving us a 5-star rating and leaving us a review. Behavioral Health Today is a podcast part of the Tried Behavioral Health Network, all rights reserved.